Welcome, mateys, to another edition of Beyond AIO from Odyssey Geek. My name is Austin. I could have thought of a good pirate name for this, but I didn't think that far ahead. And welcome back, Michael, whatever your name is.
Hey, you be listening to Pirate Scott LaFavor right here. This pirate's gonna be reviewing two episodes of Wild Woody and
I'm gonna stop right there. I am really bad at improv. Hi, Austin.
Doing good. Yeah, you sound like a very salty senior Sawyer there.
I only have one voice, and it's this voice.
As an old man, I have no idea. I really need to practice my voice as an accent. If anyone would want to give me coaching, please help me. Anyway, besides the point.
Yeah, so we're back to talk about Paws and Tails again. But first, news break.
Yeah.
We got a little more details on the new Paws and Tails episode that'll be coming out. So I'm not going to say the latest because by the time this comes out, it will not be the latest episode. But on the episode of ATC that came out in October of 2022, JD shared some more news about the new Paws and Tails episodes that he got from Eric Basil. So 4 episodes are in production, which I believe they recorded them, so I'm guessing they're in post-production now.
Ooh.
And he asked them, like, how many episodes are planned? They're planning on doing 2 seasons.
Bonkers. How long is the season going to be? Just 12 episodes or 30 episodes like the first one?
Yeah, I don't know, because the seasons, you know, season 1 has, like, I think 29 episodes. Season 2, I think, has, like, 26. And season 3 has, like, 16, 18, something like that. But I am kind of hoping that it is shorter seasons because I have some trepidation because I'm hearing that they're going to be raising money to produce the 2 seasons, like crowdfunding. And that makes me nervous because it's very hard to get people to buy audio drama. If you want to know more about that, read my Cost of Free Audio Drama article that's linked in the description or the podcast notes. But yeah, I know Paws and Tails has a fairly big following, but I think a lot of people are probably so used to listening to the podcast, like listening to the episodes free as a podcast and on the radio, that making them pay for episodes or pay to make new episodes may be a stretch. I have faith that it will happen. I just hope and pray that they'll finish this storyline early on.
Well, yeah, they've got to finish the bleep this out storyline as soon as possible.
Exactly. Yeah.
You better bleep that out in the final edit.
No, that's fun. I'll keep it in. That's funny. Inside joke there. But yeah, I'm assuming like the 4 episodes, like when I had talked about this, JD thought like maybe the 4 episodes are like standalone episodes, you know, just get things rolling again, which I'd be okay with that. Like I wouldn't want them to get right into the storyline right away necessarily. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, these are going to be written by David Carl, right?
So I think it's implied.
Okay.
From like the first news item that we have, because he is involved in the project, and since he was the one that created the show and probably had the ending of the series or the ending of the storyline already planned, then I would assume so. The best news is, besides they're playing so many episodes, is that a lot of the original voice actors are going to be coming back.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So we have David King as Papa Chuck returning to play him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you're really excited about this. Susan Clawson as Goose.
Very happy about that. Also happy that Goose doesn't change actors halfway through the series.
Exactly, yeah. She's one of the mainstays. And those two were like my must-haves for if they were going to do new episodes. Like, you got to have those actors back. And then we also have Linda Ford as Marcia, which you haven't heard her as Marcia yet because Chris Anthony...
Oh, they don't have Chris back as Marcia?
No, because remember, I talked about, I think in one of the past reviews, that when Insight moved from California to Texas, a lot of Texas actors there. They only kept a couple of the actors from the California ones, but no.
Well, I mean, Chris records from home now, so, you know.
Well, yeah, but I have thoughts. We'll get to that. We'll get
you
to
like,
that one when the
you like
changes.
The new actress more than Chris.
Spoiler alert. Yes.
Oh boy.
But I think also this other actress played Marcia for longer than Chris Anthony did, so I got used to her a lot more.
Okay.
But yeah, you'll actually hear the change in before season 1 is up. You'll hear the voice change.
Will I be alive by the time we
Hopefully.
Do that? I don't know how long this podcast is gonna go, but hey, you'll be sure. To all you listening out there, we'll be talking behind the scenes about what exactly the plans for this Beyond AIO segment are as we go forward, because I think we should change up the format a little bit, but we'll talk about it.
We'll see. I may have to delete that out, but we'll see.
You're gonna delete that?
I'm kidding. I may delete it. We'll
Stop
see what happens.
Yeah.
But also,
there, now you have to beep that out.
Oh, that should be your bleep for your podcast. That'd be so awesome. Okay, and also, again, we have Eric Basil as Ned. Yay!
Love Ned.
And also Larry Brantley, which I don't think I had known this person's name, but I'm not going to say who he plays because they call out who this person is, it's a bit of a spoiler, so yeah. But we are going to hear new actors.
John Whittaker?
Not quite.
Crossover.
But they are going to recast CJ and Stacy since, you know, they wanted kid actors for them. And they were kid actors before in the original series. So that I don't have a problem with. But yeah, that's exciting news. Oh yeah, I forgot to mention. I think I forgot. But yeah, the episodes, at least the four episodes, I think will be aired next year.
Yeah.
Which is only a couple months away. But for you, since we're going so slow at this, it may be... Who knows how long?
Who knows? Yeah, well, I mean, that'll be around the time that we're finishing up Return to Gilead, so I'd be happy to deep dive into new Paws and Tales in 2023.
Yeah, we'll see. Anyway, okay, all right, let's talk about the old stuff.
Well, I mean, speaking of actors changing, are CJ and Stacy different in these episodes? They're actors?
I'm not positive. I have a very hard time telling at what point the actor for CJ changes. I mean, he has three voice changes. The third one comes in season three, like about the middle, near the middle of season three.
Yeah.
But I have a hard time knowing which one is which, but I think I like that because the two actors they have for CJ in the beginning are very similar.
Yeah.
And Stacy, I think...
I'm pretty sure this one's different, at least in episode
21. I think she has a little bit deeper voice than the other one. So yeah, they might have made the voice change.
When she's delivering the lines about the go-kart after she wakes up, that was very, very clearly a different Stacy.
Yeah. So, today we're talking about episode 21, The Hullabaloo at Hunker Hill, and episode 22, A Pirate's Life.
Oh boy.
So, The Hullabaloo, I'm gonna mess that up. I love that title, I really love that title, but it messed me up there.
The Hullabaloo at Hunker Hill.
Say that five times really fast. Please don't.
I will.
Alright.
No problem.
Oh, okay, so the writer is Jeff White, and I can't remember if this is his first episode or not. I think he might have written one episode in the past. I'll look that up while we're talking.
Okay.
That's an easy word, Austin. Come on. Script supervisor is Phil Lawler, directed by David Carl, music by Tim Hossman, sound design by Jerry Swofford, and the song Forgiveness, written by Sandy Howe and Nick Brown. Which, like I said before, I love the title. I like alliteration. Alliteration is awesome.
But alliteration annoys.
Yep, exactly. To some people.
It
can be overused. It can be overused.
So, I really love this episode. Big fan of this one.
Huh. I was wondering if you would or not.
I like it. I'm a huge fan.
Even with, at the beginning, we have CJ and Stacy talking about forgiveness. I think they're talking after some class, I think, Papa Chuck or something like that in Sunday school. Like, you know, how can someone forgive someone? Which is, you know, great foreshadowing. And, you know, they bring up the, you know, 70 times 7. And then we get to a deja vu moment where Stacy starts punching CJ and asking him if he'll forgive him. And she does it again. Sound familiar?
So Phil Lawler is like, you know, there was this script that Tori Martin wrote and this joke that he used that I think was really good. Hey, why don't you use this? Is it David White? Is that his name? Jeff White? I forget.
Jeff White.
Hey, Jeff White, why don't you use this? He's like, I don't know. Is that plagiarism? What? Nah.
I don't know if it's intentional or not. I'm not sure when this episode came out. I think this came out in, like, late, like, 1998, 99, 2000.
Oh, then Tori Martin ripped off this episode. Okay. Well, actually, no. That would have been around the same release date, though, right?
1998 is when BTV Forgiveness came out, because that was before, like, the split episodes. 1998, I think.
Oh, right. I was forgetting that.
So, it's like, maybe a couple years in between. I'm not sure. It's funny in BTV Forgiveness, because the way BTV is situated with this is not, you know, quite as, you know, sorry, okay, ow, that kind of stuff. It's not that rapid fire. I think it's still kind of funny.
Yeah.
I think it works.
I like it.
And I love CJ's line where it says, you know, well, if I have to forgive you again, you may have to start forgiving me too.
And she's like, what, for this? And then just punches him again. I think it actually works really well for their interaction, or for the show, their relationship as friends. And then, like, they are friends. Like, they're not siblings. I'm missing something here. No, they're not. Okay. Their relationship as friends. And then that sets up really well the reason why CJ cares so much for her is that even though she's pesky and even though they have these where they get on each other's nerves, they still really care about each other. And I think it works well for the beginning of the episode.
Yeah. And I just looked it up, Jeff White, he wrote A Race Against Time, and he also wrote The Honey Buzz Principle.
Ooh! Wait, Race Against Time, which one was that again? Was that the other cart episode?
Yeah, the apple cart, apple and the skunk and the setup.
Oh, that one. I think I like that one.
I don't think you like that one, but I know you like The Honey Buzz Principle.
I know I love The Honey Buzz Principle. Okay. Well, I gotta go back and listen to all these again. But yeah, Honey Buzz Principle was solid from what I remember. I know you didn't like that one as much.
I do like that one quite a good bit, but not as much as you did. But you made me appreciate it a lot more.
Okay, well, what are your thoughts on this one? I mean, maybe you can wait until the end to give overall thoughts. But continuing from here, we get an interaction between CJ, Stacy, and... Resident Bully
Hugh
McClaw. Yeah, voiced by a different actor, I think.
Yep,
there we go.
I believe so.
I don't mind it. I like him.
Like, could you tell right away that it was a different actor?
Yeah, I'm usually quick at picking up like that. Is it Steve Bridges?
No, it's... I can't remember his name, but yeah, it is a different actor. And he has a soapbox derby car that he wants to show off, which is not a go-kart. It's soapbox, which I think is a little bit confusing, especially since we had it in the same season. We had, you know, the... go-kart race, and now we have a soapbox derby. Like, I guess soapbox doesn't have a motor in it. Is that right?
Yeah.
I should look this up.
Yeah, where it just goes down by... Oh, it wasn't that the case with the Great Go... Wasn't that the case with the Great Go-Kart Race, too? Because none of them had motors?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, I think it's kind of like... Is it like the soapbox derby, like, in the Popsicle Kid? I think that one... Those don't... Oh, wait, no. They did have motors on that one, because Rodney's blew up.
So that was... I'm trying to think about what that was actually called, but... Anyway, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's not like their go-karts would have been more like soapboxes, and this, which I don't think this, the soapbox has a motor either. I'm confused. I mean, this was like, you know, like late 1800s, early 1900s, so I'm not sure how easy it was to get a motor for your own small vehicle, whatever. But anyway, yeah, Stacy gets curious about it.
Mm-hmm.
Hugh is, you know, kind of, because he's going against her in the race, and I'm not sure if CJ, I think CJ was going to be in the race too, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, he's, you know, bragging about his soapbox derby, and they go to see it, and...
Well, Stacy goes to see it, but only after CJ's protesting, like, no, she doesn't want to go see it, and Stacy goes, well, actually, I kind of do. And I, at the beginning of the episode, thought, I don't see a reason why not. It's Hugh, and he's right when he says later in the episode, if I wanted to hurt your friend, I could have just punched her right there. But if he's kind of luring her over... I'd actually want to give him a chance to see, okay, what are you actually talking about here? And just because it's Hugh, I don't see a reason to say, no, I don't even want to associate with you. It seems like if she had good intentions to go see the car, it would have been a good idea. But we learn later that's not the case. And I thought that was a really interesting twist that on my second listen through, I could actually hear in her voice at the beginning when she's saying, like, yeah, maybe I'll go... she's like, this will give me a chance to check out the competition. Maybe he'll give me a chance to drive it. Like, that's foreshadowing for her real intentions of it.
Yeah, Stacy wants to... Well, she wants to drive it. Like, Hugh tries to get her to drive it. And, of course, CJ protests. You know, like, who knows what Hugh is up to. They're on Hunker Hill, which sounds like a pretty dangerous hill. Like, Gumper's Cliff? Or Gumper's Creek? Or Place in Odyssey?
Gumper's Hill.
Yeah. And... They were told, you know, no racing on that hill, which I guess they weren't going to have the race there. I guess they're having it someplace else. But also, no helmet, which is really stupid.
Because it's Hugh, you know.
Well, even if she was riding her own on a regular hill, she still should have worn a helmet. You know, she could have fell right out and hit her head.
I think, well, the point is that Hugh teases her into persuading her not to wear her helmet. Or wear a helmet, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Peer pressure or, you know, mm-hmm. Chicken. Like, yeah, it's not good, but yeah, it works.
And well, I mean, if I can bring up here also, because this is kind of the context, a little later on, Papa Chuck is asking what went on or what was going on. And CJ says that Hugh made her get in the cart. And Papa Chuck goes, he made her? Well, that doesn't sound like Stacy. I thought, wait, what, it doesn't sound like Stacy? Like, why wouldn't that sound like Stacy to be pressured into doing something? Would Stacy resist Hugh? Because Hugh seems like a pretty formidable guy.
Yeah, I'm probably not the greatest of wording there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like, you know, like Stacy wouldn't allow herself to be made to do that. I mean, he doesn't make her. He's made it really hard for her to say no. I believe the actor for Hugh in this and going forward is Earl Fisher.
Okay.
I can't remember if I told you this in the beginning or not, but the one that plays Hugh McClaw in the beginning is Joseph Narducci. Sound familiar?
Is he... Hang on, I'm trying to remember the name. Is he Kendall Park?
Yep, in the new adventures.
Yay! awesome, man.
Yeah, I didn't know that for years. And actually, he's in the original Jonathan Park Adventures. He plays a few minor characters in that series, and I didn't know that for a long time either. Like, wow, this guy has been in more stuff than I thought that I've listened to.
Man, I need to get on and listen to this stuff. I haven't heard new series 8 and 9, and I think that's out already. But anyway,
yeah, good stuff. Anyway, so Stacy goes down the hill. She starts screaming. You hear Hugh laughing. She hits a telephone pole, then a fence.
Yeah, that's really dramatic.
That's a bad day.
Bad day indeed.
And it sounds like she's very seriously hurt. And then we hear from Goose. Goose has this really funny line. Like, she's sincere in it. She's like, you know, I'd be willing to, like, donate, like, a kidney or a nostril or something. Nostril.
It's like, Goose, you're a weasel. You, you wouldn't be able to help a bear by donating your nostril.
Or a kidney. If they have kidneys.
You know, fair.
Think,
yeah.
I think they would have kidneys.
Weasel Kidney. It's the name of a punk rock band. Weasel Kidney.
But yeah, we get to hear Doc Lowell again, which, hey, I think it's a different actor than we heard in The Perfect Christmas Gift, which makes sense since I think a lot of the voice actors have changed now.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that, you know, she's, you know, very hurt. You know, he reprimands him, you know, what are you kids thinking? And CJ gets angry and goes to pick a fight on purpose with Hugh.
Yeah. So he goes out, and I kind of admire where CJ is coming from. I don't agree with his methods, obviously. But I admire his willingness to stand up for Stacy, seeing that she's been hurt and that, like, Hugh looked really, really bad there. And so he runs out with Goose, and Hugh sounds really apologetic at first. Like, hey, Stacy is there in there. Is she okay?
Like, you can hear that he's sincere in his voice there. But again, since he has a reputation, so it's harder to trust him.
Right. And CJ obviously doesn't trust him.
Yeah. And he actually, like, attacks them. Like, he throws the first punch.
Mm-hmm.
And then Papachuk breaks them up. And I love Goose's line, too. Like, where, like, CJ was trying not to make a big deal, like, how much he was getting hurt. And she's like, you were getting whipped like an egg.
It's so good. And then later she's got a line that says, you were like a bug on Hugh's windshield. Which, cars? But, okay.
Well, they have cars. I'm just not sure about windshield wipers. I guess bugs would still hit the windshield.
Yeah.
Just not very fast. But yeah, and then CJ storms off saying, some people don't deserve forgiveness.
Ooh.
Which, you know, really, really harsh.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Papachuk prays for him that, you know, he'll see differently. And then we come to a scene which is kind of odd, but I understand since they're going to transition here, that we have a meeting at the club with Marcia and Ned, but we barely hear them. I think it's all clips from previous episodes. Maybe not Ned, since Eric Basil's in a lot of stuff. I think it's older clips, because you only hear them very little, but you only, like, basically hear CJ and Goose talking majorly there.
Yeah, I didn't pay too much attention to the voices in the background, but I guess I was able to, like, I could hear that there were members of the club there, but I'd forgotten who exactly was in the club.
So they go to guard the hospital in pairs to make sure Hugh doesn't come in to attack him, which, yeah, a little bit overblown, but yeah, like, I can understand his intent wanting to protect her.
Yes.
But I know Hugh wouldn't do that, and, you know, I don't know what kind of hospital security they have, but I'm sure Stacy would have been all right.
Right. So it's just CJ building off of his anger from before and thinking that Hugh has the worst intentions, and the only intention Hugh would have would be to come and do something like that. But if he actually sat down and thought about it, he would realize, oh, yeah,
that's
not logical. There really was no reason. Yeah.
But he does do something logical. Something that he probably should have done before trying to fight with Hugh is plays detective and goes and checks the car.
Yeah. Which, I have a question about this.
Okay.
Well, first off, he's got a great line where he says that it doesn't make sense that Stacy would go out of control because mm-hmm. she's such a good driver.
Yep.
And that works in the opposite way when we reach the climax of the episode, because we realize, or Stacy says, that she crashed on purpose. Crazy. But here, he finds the brake line for the car, and it's been cut. And then that's actually never followed up on. How did the brake line get cut? Did she cut it, or did she just crash on purpose?
She crashed on purpose. But I think she said that she cut the brake line or tampered with it. I'm not sure how she cut it so fast and with what.
She says she did?
I'm pretty certain, because she said she crashed on purpose. She said I think someone said, like, it would be strong enough wire to withstand or something like that.
Yeah.
And, like, no, it was cut.
Right.
I'd have to go back and listen to it. Yeah, it was intentionally cut. That's why he thought that it was
Hugh
sabotage, but it was sabotage on Stacy's part.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. When would she, because she realized halfway down the hill that it was better. So at that point, she decided to sabotage it. But how do you cut the brake line of a car halfway down the hill? I'm guessing it's from the brake pedal, which is underneath the car. And, like, while she's going that fast. And furthermore, it didn't sound like she had cut it to sabotage. It sounds like she just steered into the telephone pole herself.
Well, we also come into the scene a little bit late because I think CJ comes out from someplace and he sees her going down this hill and screaming that kind of stuff. So he didn't see everything. So I'm assuming when she did it was probably earlier on. And like her screams doesn't sound very scared. It sounds like, you know, kind of dramatic.
Okay.
When you go back and re-listen to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is a little bit of a plot hole there.
I think that's a fine explanation.
But I think it still works. The twist is still really, really cool.
Okay, yeah, if the additional information, it could have just taken one line of her saying, I cut it when I was halfway down the hill, but then I couldn't regain control to get it to, like, to stop it properly. Because I thought that she had crashed it on purpose.
Yeah, she did. So I think it's like she cut the brake line, but she thought she could still
crash and get out. Okay.
Crash it without being hurt too much, which is still a stupid idea.
Yeah.
And so yeah, Goose goes to get Papa Chuck, or no, Officer Hunt. And I have this at this point in my notes. There's a lot of harmonica music in this episode. It makes it very. It almost reminds me of John Campbell's score for Relatively Annoying. Like kind of that swampy kind of feel or something like that.
Now, is this John Campbell or is this
Tim Hossman? Okay. But it reminded me of that. Like there's a lot of harmonica in this, I noticed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like his score for these two episodes.
Mm-hmm. So they get Officer Hunt involved and we don't actually hear what's wrong with the cart until like the next scene, which is nice. Like we know something's wrong and it doesn't tell us right away. It's kinda, you know, I can't remember if that's a commercial break there or not.
Yeah, there was a commercial break before it's after they investigate the crash to the scene where Papa Chuck is reading. There's a commercial break in between there.
Oh, yeah, because we have that last line from CJ. It's like, he's going away for a long time, or we're finally going to get him, or something like that.
Well, and he also says, well, what are we going to do? We can't beat up you. And Goose goes, I think we proved that.
No bees in pants.
I don't know. Continuity.
But yeah, so Hugh is arrested by Officer Hunt, which... Again, this is, you know, different universe and very old school, like very, you know, 19th, 20th century, whatever. If it was intentional, like, I'm not sure how serious of a punishment he would get. Like, if Stacy died, then that'd be one thing. But I'm not sure, like, what the laws would be at that time, like, doing that, like, sabotaging something like that. And it's kids. I don't know if he's a teenager. I don't think he's a teenager. He's older, like, the kids are, like, third graders, and he's probably, like, being a grade or two above them, maybe?
Sounds like alternate Rydell logic there.
Let's not go there. That's anyway. Modern day. This is not modern day, so no excuses.
Okay, fair. All right.
But, yeah, so, and Hugh protests. He said it wasn't him, and CJ is just relishing in, you know, finally getting rid of his antagonist, his bully.
Yeah.
And, like, taunting him. And then Stacy wakes up, so she is doing some better, but, you know, she still sounds weak. And CJ tells her, like, hey, you know, we're not going to have to worry about Hugh at all ever again.
She starts to sound really worried.
Yeah, she doesn't take the news like he thought she would because, yeah, here, I got the notes here. So Stacy crashed on purpose. She wanted to sabotage it, thought she could crash without getting hurt. So maybe she didn't cut it. Maybe it did crash that way.
Yeah, that's the, I mean, at least you're saying that, oh, I think she cut it, makes me... Like, that reassures me that it's not, like, a plot point that'll be followed up sometime in the future about who cut the brake line or anything.
Yeah. Was it crashed or was it cut? Or was he pushed?
Fell or was pushed?
Of course, Papa Chuck is, you know, appalled at what she did and CJ too. And, like, oh boy, we gotta, you know, get him off the hook.
Well, Papa Chuck also gives him some great advice about forgiveness. So, I don't remember the entire conversation, but I remember he says, well... You need to apologize to Hugh, but also first, you need to ask God for forgiveness for what you did, because that was really sinister on Stacy's part. I think even more than CJ's, that she would do that.
Yeah.
And so the narration says that they ask for forgiveness, and then, yeah, and then Papa Chuck goes to release Hugh.
They do get the courage to finally go apologize to him, and they both apologize, like, I think Papa Chuck or Officer Hunt told him, like, what Stacy did.
Papa Chuck told him everything. And he said, oh, those two are going to be so sorry.
Yeah, I'm going to get my cousin Joey. We're going to beat him up.
Oh, man. I want to see Joey again.
Well, now that we're getting new episodes, maybe we will.
Yay! Let's contact Eric Basil and ask him. No, is it? Yeah. No, it's, who was the main writer? Is that Eric Basil?
David Carl.
No. David Carl. Contact David Carl and ask him. I'm such a bad Paws and Tails fan. My apologies.
It's okay. It's late and, you know, we're still on season one, so it's not a big deal.
All right.
But, yeah, so they apologize to him and he's like, you know, I'm not going to forgive you. Like, if you guys think I'm going to forgive you, you're way off or something like that. And they counted on him doing that. They sacrifice something.
Yep.
Going to make restitution this way. Stacy gives away her car, which has won races in the past, and she admits, you know, it's not as good as his, so it gives him, like, the conversation, like, yes, you did have a better car than me.
Yeah.
But he says he wasn't going to forgive them.
He'll take their advice. He says, I still won't forgive you, but I think you can give me some help on this car or something like that.
Yeah. And then the narrator says, you know, Hugh never did forgive them, but he also never got back at them, and winning the race helped as well.
Now, there's something I wanted to bring out in that conversation. I thought that Stacy giving her car was kind of shallow because she can't use her car anyway. But then I realized, well, this might be a permanent thing that Hugh is going to be able to use the car in the future for races rather than just this race.
Mm-hmm.
But also,
yeah, like she gave it to him. Like, she didn't just let him borrow it.
Yeah. But also, even if she was just letting him borrow it, it's saying that we want you to win the race. We want you to be the one who actually uses this car to win, instead of before not wanting to have anything to do with him. Now they're actually teaming up with him to have him win. And that's even more of a show of their apology to him than anything else.
Yeah. Actions backing up their words.
Speak louder than words, some might say.
Mm-hmm. And then we come to the song, which it starts a little bit, I don't know, it's not a cappella, just very simple music at the beginning. And then we have some really happy marching music. And it's pretty catchy, too. And it sounds like a song Miss Harbor would sing. It sounds like a song that she would sing in her class, like
yeah.
She did with the Scourge of Me.
Yeah. Oh boy, I remember that.
So what did you think of the song?
I liked it. I think it was a great showcase of just how amazing a singer Sandy Howell is. I've been doing a lot at Liberty University with vocal performance because that's what I'm pursuing as a minor. So I've been practicing a lot on different singing techniques. She's got it. There are several times in the song, like the final notes, and then she's also got a high note towards the end of the song where she just does her very best at it, and I really, really enjoyed hearing her. The song itself was catchy. It's, I mean, obviously, it's made for younger kids. I still enjoyed it, though. I liked listening to it.
Yeah, and I like how, like, it ends, how it begins with that first line, with the music being simpler.
Yeah.
I like how that ends. And also the cast, I think it was castanets at one point.
Ooh.
And there was a nice touch. But yeah, this episode, I don't think this episode, I don't think I heard it on the radio when it first came out. I think I listened to it on a re-air or maybe like on the CDs or a podcast or something. So I haven't heard this one as much. I think the Great Go-Kart Race is more fun, but this one I think is better in terms of story and keeping the characters in character and also presenting the lesson a lot better.
Yeah, as far as fun goes for me, I'm more interested in how all-encompassing an episode is. So even if there's an episode where not a lot of fun things happen, but we get to go to a lot of different locations and it seems like the world is really well constructed, that's an episode that's fun to me. This one didn't have a lot of expanse outside of just CJ, Stacy, Hugh, and Goose all talking, and then a little bit of Papa Chuck. It was okay, and I really liked it for what it was and for the story that was presented. I thought it was a really good job. Still not as strong, I think, as Standing Alone, but it's up there.
All right, nice. All right, so we go to the next episode, which is, I think, maybe the most fun episode in this season, is A Pirate's Life. And this one was written by Clark Corkum. Script supervisor was Phil Lawler, directed by David Carl, music by Tim Hosman, sound design back to Eric Basil, and the song I by Sandy Howe and Jody Frankfurt.
Yeah, there's a, I really want to like this episode, but there is a huge, huge misfire in this episode, no pun intended.
The cannon fire? All right, so I just want to say at the top here, I love the seafaring music in this. Oh, yeah. Tim Hausman does such a great job with the score. Like, it fits us perfectly. You have, like, that kind of that whimsy feel and that seafaring feel to it. It's, the score is just awesome.
I wonder if the pirateers have a rule book, like this rule book.
Oh, that will be fun. That will be interesting. Hey, Jonathan Cook, Alicia Hansen, take notes.
I mean, speaking of being able to contact the producers, but no, he did a great job, especially with, at the beginning, I don't remember if there was pirate music at the very beginning of the episode, but as soon as the pirates are introduced, you hear the music start up, and then they start talking, and that music does not stop until the end of the whole pirate sequences, so that was fun to hear.
Yeah, it's a great, like a tell that, okay, things are shifting here.
Yep.
So we hear CJ had another run-in with Hugh, this is like a third one this week, which...
That's really bad timing. That is really bad timing.
Yeah, it is. Like, he didn't, like, learn his lesson, unless this happened in the same week that the last episode happened. Like, this was, like, the third time. Like, and the first time was his fight with Hugh, because we don't hear from Stacey in this episode and how she's doing. So, it could happen that this happened the same week.
I don't know.
But, yeah, it doesn't work great with his character because, like, we saw some progression with this character and now it just kind of relapsed a little bit.
Well, I feel like this is also, like, the... What was the episode... The name of the episode? I think it was last session that we talked about with the dual storyline.
Oh, Stacey's Dilemma.
Yeah, that one. I feel like it was like that where we don't really hear what happened to CJ before the episode started. We just hear that something happened and we're supposed to empathize with that. I think we should have seen, I think there probably should have been a 30-second scene of CJ doing something wrong and then running to the dock and then Jeremiah Walrus is there. So to have there be a little bit more time where we can actually see what was going on, because I don't really think that CJ getting in, like, in a fight with Hugh McClaw, especially considering what happened the previous episode, is good enough fodder for the beginning here.
Well, I think it works better than it does in Stacey's Dilemma because there's so much put upon it that, like, I did this, I feel bad about it, how do I get forgiven, or how do I feel forgiven? I think it's not as emphasized as much in this, so I don't think that, like, want of knowing what he actually did is as strong.
Yeah, well, here he also says that he was trying to stand up for what he thought was right.
Oh, yeah.
We don't even hear what that was.
And he got expelled, like Tiffany.
Oh, boy. Oh, true. Oh, yeah, that Tiffany. Oh, man. It's been so long that I've actually, like, I've lost track of which Tiffany is which.
Yeah, this is the better Tiffany. Kind of. But yeah, so he went down to the dock. He's, you know, just hiding in a small boat. And Jeremiah, who we heard a little bit and Standing Alone.
Aw, yeah, I'm glad he's here.
So I guess the rule that CJ broke was no fighting.
Yes.
And CJ just kind of, I'm not sure if this is coming more from like something that's built up, but it's probably more like a spur of the moment. Like, you know, I don't like rules and that kind of stuff. And he does give, like, some stuff about these kind of fake, oh, don't do this, don't do this. And then he gives a really weirdly specific thing.
Oh, I just thought about that. That is not a really great connection. Because if you get in trouble for fighting with Hugh McClaw and you get, like, you're subject to the no-fight rule, I feel like the emphasis there is I'm just so upset at Hugh. I knew fighting is never a good idea. But that is stretching it a little bit to say that CJ is so upset with the rule. Whereas I think the rule is the least of your worries here, CJ.
I think you're convincing me a little bit more that I think there should have been a scene before this that kind of has a little more of a lead up to that, some foreshadowing of that. Like maybe like that scene like at school, he's kind of me grumbling because his mom got after him about something. He comes to school, fights with Hugh, and then the next scene we hear that he got expelled. Harbor caught him fighting. You convinced me. I think that would have worked better.
I don't even think fighting with you should be the issue here. I think it should be a rule about something that isn't wrong, but something that in a specific context it isn't allowed. Like eating peanut butter in the no nuts section of the cafeteria or something, or having to like come in at this specific time during recess or whatever. I don't know. Something where it's not so painfully obvious, especially considering the previous episode where he was in a fight with Hugh.
And lost.
To explain why. Yeah.
Whipped like an egg.
I think that was also I think it's also referenced in this episode that he got creamed or whatever. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I think Jeremiah said that, like, even though you're losing, we're all rooting for you or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Jeremiah Walrus. I just imagine him, like, flopping around from place to place. Like, hey, CJ.
Yeah, and he suggested, like, oh, you can just, if you want to go to a place with no rules, you know, just jump on a ship and go somewhere else. And like, oh yeah, my dad's ship is coming in.
And that's how Jeremiah Walrus was arrested for conspiracy.
But his dad is actually, like, his last name is, oh, for crying out loud, I can't remember. He was in the last episode, Blinded by the Sight, Captain Horatio. Yeah, Jeremiah Horatio. The thing is, I thought Horatio was the lighthouse keeper, because we talked about that, and he sounded like he's being older.
Oh?
I don't know. Like, they're both walruses, or was it walrusi?
Just keep going.
But, yeah, like, I think he talks about, because I think CG later says it's Captain Horatio's ship. And he also, like, you know, my dad's on that ship coming home.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah, it'd be kind of embarrassing, you know, running on the same ship that his dad is. Like, hi, Dad, running away. Can you help me with my trunk?
I mean, he wouldn't have to. I mean, I can imagine a pretty funny scenario where the ship comes in and the plank is down, and then he's sort of, like, climbing on the underside of the plank to get to the ship, and his dad's like, oh, what's that? He's like, no, nothing. Or I don't know.
Yeah. And also the line about, oh, there's that kid from Fiji. Like, well, he was already from Fiji. It doesn't make a difference that he sailed all the way over there or something like that.
I don't think you get it, Jeremiah. Well, CJ also mentions a rule about no tying your cousin upside down to a tree and throwing eggs at his head. And Jeremiah says, do you really need a rule for that?
Yeah, that's a really specific rule I talked about earlier, but I couldn't remember exactly what it was.
Especially when the rule is just, don't do it.
Yeah. You want to hear what happened with my cousin with the Wiffle Ball bat?
What is that? Oh, your cousin? You're actually?
No, I was referencing Wooten from The Other Side of the Glass. Oh, what happened with the Wiffle Ball bat incident? It involved surgery.
I don't remember that episode. I remember the episode. I don't remember that quote. Aww.
Okay, anyway, we'll move on. Anyway, so they kind of talk this up, and then, like, CJ is like, you know, I'm not doing this. I'm not crazy or whatever. And then Jeremiah leaves, and CJ falls asleep. Clue there. And then he hears that somebody got on the boat with him.
Yep, and it's two licorice-loving pirates.
Exactly. One sounds like he's, like, French, and the other one sounds like, I don't know, just a gruff American accent or something.
And the French guy likes licorice. He took a whole trip to get it, or they stayed in town longer to get it.
I think the other one says that he doesn't like licorice, and then
he eats it.
Yeah.
Later in the scene.
Yeah.
It was a little strange to hear their conversation go, oh, those foolish people in that town have no idea who we are. Yeah, after all, we're pirate. Yeah, there's so much of an easier way to say that. Be like, man, the captain's gonna be so upset when he realizes we're late. Well, I mean, when you're a pirate, you gotta be on time, or something like that. And, like, cite the rule book.
Rule number 472, no one shall be late aboard the ship.
Yeah, you could say, like, rule 472 of the pirate code says, and then CJ jolts awake, and they go, oh.
Like, uh-oh, rules? Like, it's not pirates that he's scared of. Like, oh, no, rules.
Well, then, yeah, maybe that wouldn't be the right place to reveal that. But, yeah, the dialogue was a little stilted right there.
Yeah, it is funny. It's a funny exchange there.
Yes.
But he makes a noise, and then they find him. And
well, and the gruff pirate goes, I heard a noise. And the other pirate goes, what? I'm hungry. No, not your stomach.
Oh, yeah. And CJ, very good on his feet, like, he turned the situation around pretty quickly, like, you know, I want to be a pirate too. And then
ooh, yeah. Well, I mean, that is kind of what he'd been thinking about before he fell asleep,
pretty much. Yeah. And I
well,
love
this also
I love
also
I this
line
I have it written down all the way. Unless if you have it all written down, go ahead. If not, I'm gonna read it real quick.
Oh, maybe if it's the same line. Is it the licorice line?
Spunk.
What?
No. Okay, go ahead with the licorice.
Okay, here it is. So it's CJ wakes up, and the French pirate goes, I think it's the French pirate. Oh, yeah, it is the French pirate. He goes, like, hey, we're a pirate. We're the meanest men on the seven seas, or something like that. And then the deep voice pirate goes, hey, you got any licorice? And the other guy goes, I'm trying to make a point here.
Pretty good, but I think this part was better, like, when CJ was talking, like, he wants to be a pirate, and then once he's like, he has spunk. He reminds me of me when I was young. Says, you were a whiny, sibling coward when you were young. Said, he reminds me of I wanted to be when I was young, okay?
He should have said, yeah, and so was he. And CJ should have gone, hey. Would have been funny.
They're going to let the captain decide whether or not he can become a pirate. And the pirate is a sea dog, which I guess he's an actual dog. I don't know what kind of dog. And his name is Francis T. Stain, which is funny because he's British.
He's probably a chihuahua. Or he's probably some kind of, like, little dog.
And his hat is so big that it's, like, covering most of him.
Yeah. That'd be funny.
But yeah. So he tells him, like, he wants to be a pirate. And he talks about, you know, he wants to go someplace with no rules. And, like, oh, rules? Well, we got rules. And it's like, oh, we gotta have discipline. And they have the Pirate's Book of Rules and Bylaws,
which is 1,700
pages long.
Yeah, 800 pages of rules and the 900 pages of bylaws, which are, what are they again? Oh, they're rules. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like someone just came up with them like, oh, yeah, what rule should I do this on this and this? Like, oh, yeah, I got this really big blank book for Christmas. I gotta do something with it. Oh, yeah, I'll write a rule for a pirate ship.
I have a theory about this episode, about the rule book. Okay, so my theory about the rule book is that all these rules are just things that the captain has made up, and that the rule book is just illegible gibberish. And so,
like, none of the others can read?
Yeah, none of the sailors, none of the pirates can actually read, and the captain's the only one who can read. Maybe he can't read. So he's got this book of all of this chicken scratch, and he's just making up all these rules and reciting them to the pirates, which makes sense why there are so many ridiculously specific rules. So if he, and also makes sense why he just throws out the book at the end, because he knows it's worthless. That's my theory about the rule book. I don't know if it's true or not.
That's interesting. But since we do know it's a dream, it's probably, you know, his mind just exaggerating things.
We don't have to go there.
But yeah, they said, okay, he doesn't want to be a pirate, so he has to be fed to the piranhas. And like, wait, we don't have piranha. I said, okay, so the rule book says, you know, he has to be put in a small box that's chained to the back of the ship and dragged behind the ship until they find a place that they can get piranhas.
That's cruel. That's crazy. Okay.
Yeah. Instead, he gets to polish your boots because he wants to be a pirate again.
Yeah. Which is why, like, that the rule is so specific. If there's some boy who, or like somebody who once says he wants to be a pirate, then says he doesn't want to be, then says he does want to be again, or then says he's running away from home.
Yeah. So, because he didn't want to let his parents know they got expelled from school.
It was that specific. The captain also has a line where he says, well, that's a bit of a sticky wicket.
Mm-hmm. They talk about him being British. That's why, like, tea stain, yeah. Like, you know, British are known for eating or drinking tea.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he gets to polish their boots, but it's really difficult because they keep moving around. They won't take them off. And I think one of the rules was, like, if somebody doesn't wear the boots or something like that, that, you know, their tongue nailed to the mast and hands filled with scalding hot mush.
Ow.
Which you hear a lot about that mush later.
And then he gets scalding hot mush to eat.
Yeah. I like how the cook says, you know, you're allowed to die from food poisoning, but not starve to death.
That's fine. I respect that rule.
But then he actually talks a little bit of sense into him. Basically, like, you know, you will be punished. You will be punished for people that don't love you, where you're running away from people that punished you because they love you. And here, they'll just throw you to the sharks to punish you.
That's actually a really powerful line where he says, you were going to be punished by people who care about your own good. And that's something I heard that I thought, oh, great point. CJ's worrying about the rules. And like Ryan and I have been talking about this on Return to Gilead, with some of the episodes that talk about, like, should you snitch on somebody who does something wrong? And our point was, the reason why you would do that is because people can learn a lot from supposedly bad experiences and by getting in trouble and by not being enabled to do those bad things. So the people who are going to punish CJ, his father, they care to keep CJ on the right path. So this pirate gets it. That's great.
And if it wasn't a dream of thing, like, okay, what was his story? Like, he is fairly wise, so I wonder what his story is.
Mm-hmm.
So he does fall asleep, and then
he falls asleep in a dream.
Yeah, and that could happen. I don't ever remember falling asleep in a dream that I'm aware of. But anyway, yeah, they hear that they're getting ready to attack a ship, and CJ is actually kind of a little bit excited, a little bit, until he finds out. Gasp! It's Captain Reginald Horatio's boat, or his ship.
Yep.
With CJ's dad on board.
And which, wow, CJ, you were just ready to attack some random ship until you found out it was your dad? Your dad was on it?
Yeah. Both of these things kind of basically debunk two myths. Like, you know, okay, so one is rules. Like, whether it's bad company or not, pretty much any place you go, they're gonna have rules of some kind, whether they're stupid or not.
Yeah.
But every place is gonna have some kind of discipline, some kind of structure. And also, two, pirates. Pirates aren't all good people. Most of the pirates, like the real life pirates, aren't good.
I thought that was the point.
Yeah.
That pirates are evil people. They're pirating.
But, you know, kids like pirates so much, but, you know, they're kind of like anti-heroes in some cases, which I think is kind of sad. Like, Patch the Pirate's a totally different one. Patch the Pirate is not that kind of pirate. And Pirateers, well, I don't want to spoil. If you haven't heard Pirateers yet, go and listen to that.
Go hear it now. It's just like, isn't it about a half an hour for the first season? Or a little bit longer than that?
I think it's about 40-some minutes.
Oh, yeah.
For all of it together.
Just of basically I mean, this is the pitch for episode one. Jonathan Cook talking to himself for almost the full series of the first season.
Yeah, we talked about that in a previous review. So yeah, go listen to Pirateers.
Oh, we did, didn't we? If you haven't heard it yet, stop this review right now and go hear Pirateers. I will encourage you to do that. I don't know if Austin will.
Well, yeah, I'll put, since we're talking a lot about pirates in this, I'll put the link in the podcast notes so you do not have any excuse.
Yes.
Anyway, both of those things are kind of debunked. Basically, these kind of dreamlike things like, oh yeah, this would be cool to have, like, no rules. Like, well, everybody goes to have rules. Like, oh, it'd be kind of cool to be a pirate, you know, just going all these places, you know, and getting treasure and all that. Like, where do you think you're getting that treasure and all that stuff from? You're going to be stealing from people. You're going to be hurting people, killing people.
It's also an understanding that even people who you perceive as being evil, and people who might be evil, still believe that they're justified in some way. They might understand that what they're doing is wrong, but they might not care about it. So they would still have some kind of a guideline or some kind of a system. It may not be a moral one, but it's something that tells them what to do. So the rule book itself might be evil, and I would suspect that the rule book would have a rule in it saying, like, when you plunder someone, it should be like this kind of person, and if somebody's innocent, make it all the more lethal the way that you attack them. But turns out instead
there's no rule.
Yeah.
About they have to pillage. It's probably a lot of rules about, you know, how to pillage, but it doesn't say that you have to or like which one you choose to pillage. Which is funny. Like it's a twist. They're like, whoa, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, CJ says, well, yeah, I know it's because it's in your rule book, and the captain goes, rule book? Wait, oh, and it's a slip of the tongue where, and then CJ realizes, wait, it's not in your rule book? And that was a really interesting surprise.
So that actually probably does go against your theory a little bit, because if he had made all this stuff just on the fly, then he probably wouldn't have said anything about that. Like, oh yeah, we have a rule for that. So I'm assuming someone else made the rules, or he made the rules but just forgot to put that rule in there.
That's what I would, yeah, that does debunk that theory. I would have rather if the episode had been like that. And maybe the climax instead would have been, rule book? Oh yeah, rule 277 says this rule, and then one of the other pirates says, I thought rule 77 was never give your parrot a cracker when it's on a monkey. No, that's not the rule. And then CJ says, show me this rule, and he looks at the rule book and it's all chicken scratch. That would have been really funny.
Yeah, that's what you need to say in school to make sure what you're reading is not chicken scratch.
Yeah, just like my notes on my computer that I typed.
Yeah, you'll be a good doctor someday.
Oh, come on. My signature's awesome. What are you talking about?
Anyway, so he gets frustrated. Like, oh, we have to. We're pirates. We have to do that. And then he gets upset and throws the huge book overboard.
Just yeets it overboard. Yeah,
and drain the ocean by throwing that big old book overboard. But yeah, it's like, oh, like, why'd you do that? It's like, and then people's like, oh, wait, without a rule book, you're not the captain. You're just a stuffy British man in a silly hat.
Wait, silly? Come on.
Yeah.
Then they very happily just throw him overboard.
Yeah. You hear him say at one point, he says, not the hat, not the hat.
And then immediately they're like, okay, we'll fix your hat. All right, now we'll throw you overboard.
Yeah, the feather doesn't keep getting caught in their face like Whitlock. Go listen to Pirateers. Yes. Anyway,
that's
yeah.
That's the first episode I heard.
Anyway, they toss him overboard, and like, wait a minute, we don't have a captain. And CJ gets to be the captain.
Aww.
And he doesn't want to be.
And his first order, but his first order as, you know, pseudo-captain is to tell them all to be quiet.
Oh, yeah, that is. Rule number one, be quiet when the captain is talking. Unless there is a cannon being shot at you, then you can make as much noise as you want.
Well, that was the reason. He told him to be quiet because he heard a poof. You can hear it in the background. The sound design is really great.
Yeah, that whistle.
Yeah.
So, yeah. He gets thrown overboard or jumps overboard or something, and
the ship disintegrates and he falls into the sea is how that works.
Yeah, the ship was very not well made, so like he leaned against the railing and fell on.
No, it just had a lot of gunpowder in it.
Yeah.
That's all.
I guess we can go ahead and talk about this, that he wakes up and it was a dream.
Okay, why? Why did this have to be a dream? What makes this story better if this is a dream?
Probably the consequences wouldn't be as severe. Like, if he actually was gone, he would have been gone for quite a while. His dad would have been in danger. I think it would have been a lot more. Like, it is a kid's show, and it would be actual real peril. But I don't think that works, because we have some episodes coming up where some of them are, and some characters are, in very deep peril that's more scary than this episode. So, yeah, that doesn't work either.
Right. So I'm imagining he gets lost at sea and is like drifting on a piece of driftwood, and then Captain Reginald's ship comes over, lets down a life raft or some way to pick him up, and then the climax is with his dad instead of with Papa Chuck.
Ooh.
That would have made for a much more powerful ending.
I love that idea.
Especially considering this, well, I mean, I thought that's what was being set up here. This is, considering this is Paws and Tails, Wildwood, Animals. This is an audio drama. This is a story being written. You don't have to make it a dream just because it's too fantastic. That's the whole point here.
Well, the pirates, too, in the time period that this is in, I'm not sure when, like, last pirates were gone, but I think around, like, late 1800s, there's still probably a handful of pirates here and there.
And you don't even have to say that it makes sense historically. You could chalk it up to the same reason why there's some savage bear talking with Papa Chuck back in that other episode. Like, some things just don't make sense.
They will.
You know?
At least that part will.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, okay. I'm looking forward to that. And also the final line of this episode, which we'll talk about in a minute. But anyway, that's why I think this should have been real.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have just... It was all a dream trope. Only works when it's something as ridiculous as Push the Red Button.
I think that's why you're kind of tricked into it, because it feels like it's a real thing. Where in Push the Red Button, like, wait, this is way too absurd to actually be real.
It's a relief that it's a dream.
So if you don't guess by the end that it's a dream, then you weren't paying attention enough or haven't heard enough Odyssey episodes before then.
Also, Solitary Refinement works with the it was all a dream, because then it backfires on him, or not exactly backfires, but it allows Eugene to be a lot more open when he thinks it's a dream. That's a powerful episode.
It's more of your internal dialogue, kind of like Leonid Stepanov, kind of. Like, it gives a way to have internal dialogue.
Except that's not a dream.
Yeah,
except
I know.
That's real. That's scary. Okay, back to this episode.
Yeah. But yeah, I was going back to, like, you know, that Captain Reginald's boat, I think, is a merchant vessel, but they have cannons.
Oh.
I'm thinking if CJ's dreaming this, they probably do, probably to protect themselves from pirates.
I'm just imagining, it's Captain Reginald, we're approaching a pirate ship. Oh, are they preparing to fire on us? I don't know, sir. They're all gathering on deck. Ready the emergency cannon.
Yeah, like, well, I will make the first blow. Like, good defense is a good offense.
Maybe they see him toss the rule book over and think it's just a really, really bad misfired cannon or something. Like, the cannonball goes bloop.
Like, oh yeah, they're weak. They don't have that great cannons. Well, this would be an easy target.
Again, just a little bit of adaptation, I think, would have really worked to have this be an actual series of events rather than a dream.
Yeah, I like your idea. That would have been good, because, well, CJ wakes up, Papa Chuck finds him, and I've heard this episode quite a few times, and I like the episode overall most of the time, but this part annoyed me.
Oh.
Jonah, again.
Again!
We had Jonah back in Hold the Anchovies, like, what, 5 episodes back or something?
And also, Jonah wasn't escaping punishment.
Yeah. Like, he doesn't want to obey what God told him to do, which kind of is a rule. But it's a command, not necessarily a rule.
I think the final moral is even better in Hold the Anchovies than it is here. Like, for all of my ire over Hold the Anchovies, I think that it nailed the cohesion of the theme throughout the episode with the ending. Because you have all these lines about rules and the beginning with Hugh McLaw kind of, eh. But then at the end to say, oh, Jonah, that was... not a huge fan of that.
What Bible story do you think could have been a better replacement for that, for him to refer to? I just now thought of that question. I should have thought about this before.
That's a good question. Can I take a minute to think about this?
Yeah, that's fine. I can go and talk a little bit about what he says. Basically, Papa Chuck does say, like, rules, like the rules like your parents give and like teachers and that kind of stuff, you may think that they're can or things that you can or can't do, but they're there to protect you. Like, I would say in most situations, like, if an actual caring person's not abusing their authority, they're going to give rules that are going to protect people.
Well, I'm thinking, just off the top of my head, I think Samson might be a good idea, because he lost his strength because he disobeyed God's rules. Rules that didn't even make sense. Like, don't cut your hair, don't touch dead things, don't do this, don't drink wine.
Don't get involved with non-Israelite women. Well, that was one of the rules. They weren't supposed to marry outside of the Israelites. I don't think it's a perfect example, but I think that works better than Jonah.
Well, I think it's actually a really good example, because it shows that even though these rules might not make any sense, they still have a lot of consequences. Like, the reason for that is because the non-Israelite woman made him sympathetic to the Philistines, or it made him less powerful against the Philistines, because I'm trying to remember exactly how that story went. Unfortunately, I'm thinking of the Odyssey version, and I'm sad now.
The dangerous haircut. But yeah, he tells about, like oh, yeah, like, if he really valued what God said, like, don't have your haircut, don't even tell people about it, like, keep that a secret to someone that you may or may not trust. Yeah, I still don't think it's a perfect example of what I was looking for, but for something like right off the top of your head, I think it works. It works better than Jonah. Like, if it was like another, like the next season that they brought it up, Jonah, it'd be one thing, but the same season with only space a few episodes, like, yeah, you could have had something different. But then also maybe too, I don't know when these scripts were written, like maybe they were working them individually and they had them like, oh, yeah, these are already written, let's go ahead and do it. I don't know. Anyway, so we find out that CJ gets grounded for a month.
Wow.
He didn't feel too bad about it, since he kind of had, again, and the dream still had an impact on him, where, like, okay, he kind of learned his lesson that, you know, there are still going to be rules. Kind of like math. There's always going to be math involved in everything. That's a more realistic thing. Like, oh, I wish there was a place with no math. Oh, yeah, there's math in everything.
Yeah.
And then we have an interesting line from the narrator. Did you pick that up?
Yeah. Yeah, so the line that the narrator says, unless you want to say it here.
No, go ahead.
Is that, like, CJ followed the rules until the day came when he realized he had to break them. Which, what?
For a good reason. Didn't he say something about that? Like, when he had to protect or something like that?
No, I think he said until he had to break them, but that's a story for another time, I think is what the line was.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and listen to it. It's been a while. My notes are kind of old. I've listened to the episode maybe about almost a week ago now, so I had to go back. Because I think in the discussion guide for this episode, David Cross talks about, like, an episode in the future where talk about bad rules.
You're going to spoil me?
No, it's not that kind of spoiler. There is an episode early on in season 2 where it talks about when rules are made for wrong reasons.
Oh, that's an episode I'm really looking forward to.
It's one of my favorite episodes of the season, so yeah.
Oh, wow. Was it written by Phil Lawler?
No, I believe it was written by David Carl, because David Carl wrote most of the episodes in season 2.
Oh, good. Okay. Anyway.
This is pre-Rydell. Don't worry.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, anyway.
All
right,
so anyway, yeah. So now we come to the song, which, oh, I think it's as fun or more fun than the episode.
It's so good.
We have this pirate that's singing a song, and it ties into Jonah a little bit, like running and like running from rules.
I didn't really hear that tie. I heard that, thought, well, since we just talked about Jonah, I can hear it a little bit, but it doesn't have to be Jonah.
Yeah. Oh, he talks like running away, and I like his, oh, I thought I could escape to the sea. I like how that, like, the I, like you hear in pirate lingo, is using like the letter I with that. It's really cool. And it's, I love, like, the bridge part when he's kind of like a stand-up comedian. He said, I was so blind. How blind were you?
I was so blind, it was like I had a patch over both me eyes.
Well, that's actually a pretty good joke. I like the ending there, like, I was the biggest of fools, like, when he, like, comes to his turnaround.
You get character development in a song.
But yeah, and also I like the line about him saying, because, you know, his pirates have, you know, treasures, and he talks about, like, God's wisdom is brighter than jewels, or better than jewels. Psalm 19:9 says, the statutes of the Lord are right, rejoice in the heart, the commandment of the Lord is pure, lightening the eyes. Where when we follow the rules that God has for us, they're not grievous, they're not hard to do, especially when you have a heart change and you're saved and God's Holy Spirit is working on you. You're wanting to obey the rules. The rules that we know God gives us, because we know God loves us, because we know God has the best out for us, we know that we can follow his rules and we'll be safe.
Yep. It's a really hard lesson to learn, and it gets harder as you get older to try to think of, well, is this something that I've seen in scripture, or that I've seen from people who I trust who are pointing me to scripture on what the Bible says and what I should do? And if you don't learn this when you're this young and listening to Paws and Tales, and you get to a point later in life where those questions come up and you say, well, I mean, I don't have to follow this rule. I mean, it says so in the Bible, but that was like for the people of Israel thousands of years ago, right? Maybe not. It's hard. It's hard following what God has, like, what hasn't changed about scripture. Like, you know, there are little things about, like, eating certain foods that Jesus specifically says in the New Testament, this is fine. And that's confusing. I don't fully understand that. But it's still, all of scripture is one book by one author, by God, who spoke through different authors to right all these rules. But that's why Jesus is here. That's why he died for us, so that even when we fall short and disobey the rules, either intentionally or accidentally, he's there to forgive us.
Yep. So do you think the ending was the only like bad thing out of it? Like, did you enjoy it leading up to that point?
Yeah, I really did. I still think the twist of having the rule book be just chicken scratch would have been a lot funnier. But yeah, overall, I enjoyed this episode.
There is kind of some like a little bit like threatening apparel and that kind of stuff. But it's I think it's the most fun episode and funniest episode. It's more in character. Like the Great Go-Kart Race had a lot of funny lines, but it just felt kind of mean-spirited in some cases and felt out of character for a lot of characters. With this, I think it sticks a lot better. I think it goes with the universe of Positive Tales a little bit better, I think.
Something that Leave It to Beaver did, and I saw this show when I was like in late middle school, early high school. My parents and I would watch it together. There are a couple characters who go through character development on the show, and it's from episodes where something will happen and they'll be changed by it. And in a normal sitcom or in Odyssey, the characters will just go on and in future episodes not necessarily change. But on that show, they changed. And I loved seeing that. And it's something that Gilead, down Gilead Lane, almost does.
They learn a lesson from a different angle. I know that you brought that out about like Haley with like her with appearance and vanity.
Yeah, yeah. Beth Culp, who's the main writer for the first six seasons of the show, does a great job at not having your characters learn the same lesson multiple times or learn the exact same lesson. With one of the main characters, he learns a lesson about working with his teammates or about selfishness, and then he learns a more intense version of that lesson later on. But I think it can be a lot more powerful if you map out, this is what this character's arc is going to be, and when he learns this lesson, this is going to change everything he does, even in a small way, but to actually do the hard work and put that in. And that's something I'm trying to do with Woodgrove, with my characters, and it isn't easy. It's really hard. But to think, if this were a real episode, a real thing, because, like, for one, CJ dreamt all this? Where did all that come from? Did that come from inside of him? Was it a dream that God gave to him? I don't know that bringing in divine intervention was necessarily the best thing here, but if CJ really learned this lesson, we should see in the future positive evidence of that. Not just the fact that it never happens again, but that something comes up and he responds well to it. That's something I think a lot of audio drama is lacking, or a lot of the ones that I've heard, is that there are these lessons that characters learn, but that they don't have a chance to prove themselves later on that they've learned it. Make sense?
Yeah. Well, like I said, CJ's character does change. He becomes more mature. And because we have so many different writers in this first season, there's not much consistency with that and keeping like the characters how they're supposed to, you know, become later. We'll see a lot more consistency once season two rolls around.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
But coming up next time, the next two episodes, I am really excited. Probably the most excited I've been to talk about some episodes.
Oh, really?
Season, probably until...
More than Blinded by the Sight?
Yes.
Oh!
We're near the end of the season, and I think has some of the best episodes, and we get more of the storyline.
Yes!
Next time we review, whenever that happens, one of the episodes is, I think, my favorite episode from the entire first season. I think it's probably the best.
Whoa! Okay.
And the other episode furthers some of the storyline, and it also gets one of the major characters in the show gets a solo story all their own. Someone from the club.
Ooh. Okay. Ned?
No comment.
You're not gonna say okay. We're gonna have another correction course where it's that I don't really like the episode, but it does a good job in the storyline. I have no idea. We'll see.
Go back to the review and listen, and you'll hear hints about something happens, something changes. But I think you're gonna appreciate this a lot more. I'm really excited to talk about those. After this, there's only six episodes left in the season, so basically three more recording sessions. We're getting there. The end of the tunnel's in sight.
Boy, oh boy.
For the season. Anyway, it's been fun talking to you, Michael. It's always a pleasure. It's always fun talking about Paws and Tails or Odyssey or whatever it is we talk about. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a fantastic journey, and I'm looking forward to seeing it continue.